Section 14, Light from Vatican II. In August 1964, in response to an invitation from the English Sangha Trust, I returned to England and took up residence at the Hampstead Buddhist Vihara. My original intention was to stay for only 4 months, or at the most 6, since I considered myself to be permanently domiciled in India. But in the end, after 2 years at the Hampstead Buddhist Vihara, I decided to stay in England indefinitely. I therefore paid a farewell visit to India, and in March 1967, returned to England for good. During the 2 years that I spent at the Hampstead Buddhist Vihara, I was extremely busy, my time being occupied mainly with giving lectures and holding meditation classes, both at the Vihara itself and at the Buddhist Society, as well as with visiting the various provincial Buddhist groups. I was also available for personal interviews. Though there was no question of my being able to engage in literary work, I did, however, manage to find time for a certain amount of reading, being then particularly interested in informing myself about current developments in Christianity. One day, I came across a book on the Second Vatican Council and plunged into it immediately. Later, I read other books on the subject with no less avidity. In one of these books, the Roman Catholic Church was said to be characterized by authoritarianism, centralism, and triumphalism. Whether the characterization represented the Church's own verdict via the Council, or on its preconciliar Tridentine self, or whether it represented simply the verdict of the author, I do not remember, but it was a characterization that at once arrested my attention. I had heard of authoritarianism and centralism before, but I had not heard of triumphalism, which apparently meant exulting in the purely secular victories and achievements of the Church in general and of the hierarchy and the clergy in particular, as though they were spiritual victories and spiritual achievements. It meant, in fact, mistaking the worldly power and glory of the Church for its spiritual power and glory, and thinking that in working for the former, one was working for the latter. This certainly shed light on the Roman Catholic Church and explained much that was regrettable in the history of Christianity itself. But suddenly there struck me with the force of a thunderbolt the thought that the Theravada monastic order too was characterized by triumphalism. I recalled occasions on which Sinhalese monks had arrogantly insisted on taking precedence of everyone else and on being treated in effect like VIPs, in the belief that they were thereby upholding the supremacy of the Dharma. Similarly, I recalled the way in which visiting Thai bhikshus had confined themselves to teaching the newly converted ex-untouchable Buddhists such things as how to prostrate themselves before members of the monastic order and how to make offerings to them, as though in so doing they were propagating Buddhism among the ex-untouchables with a vengeance. In fact, the more I reflected on the insidious nature of triumphalism, the more instances of it among Theravada monks I could recall. And the more instances I recalled, the more convinced I became that the Theravada monastic order was indeed characterized by triumphalism. Nor was that all. I had myself been ordained into the Theravada monastic order, and I realized with horror that I may well have been unconsciously influenced by its triumphalist attitude, if only to a limited extent. An element of triumphalism may even have crept into some of my writings, especially my editorials in the Mahabodhi Journal. Having realized this, I resolved that in the future I would be on my guard against triumphalism, both in myself and in others, and that I would discourage it by all possible means. Whether it characterized the Roman Catholic Church or not, there was no place for it in Buddhism, and no place for it in the spiritual life. Strange to say, at about the same time that I became aware that the Theravada monastic order was characterized by triumphalism, I became more aware of the fact that there was a good deal of triumphalism in my immediate surroundings, as well as a good deal of formalism. 4 or 5 Sinhalese and Thai monks were then staying with me at the Hampstead Buddhist Vihara, and all of them manifested a degree of triumphalism in their dealings with British Buddhists. So much was this the case, indeed, that I was reminded of the way in which the visiting Thai monks had taught the ex-untouchable Buddhists, For though the monks who were staying with me at the Vihara certainly did not confine themselves to teaching their British disciples how to prostrate themselves before members of the monastic order and how to make offerings to them, there was the same disproportionate emphasis on these things that I'd witnessed in India. Such an emphasis was by no means a new thing to British Buddhists, however. Whether in the person of its Eastern or its Western representatives, the triumphalism of the Theravada monastic order had been a dominant factor in a section of the British Buddhist movement for more than a decade, as I quickly discovered when, a few days after my arrival in England, I shocked some participants in the Buddhist Society's annual summer school, and surprised and delighted others, by actually eating at the same table as everyone else. It was on account of incidents like this that I eventually concluded that while there was a potential for the Dharma in the West, the existing British Buddhist movement had already strayed from the right path in certain respects, and that a new Buddhist movement was badly needed.